Awesome. Okay, Luke, we're live. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, mate.
No, it's awesome. It's going to be a slightly different format for us to hang out than how we have been doing things, but I'm very, very excited to hear what you have to say over the next hour. So I'm going to throw you straight in at more of a kind of historical question, but like, what is osteopathy and how did it come into being?
Osteopathy started in the 1800s by a guy called A.T. Still, who's original founder was a doctor, and he was disheartened with the medicine at the time and decided that he could treat illness and disease and sickness with his hands. So he understood, he was a surgeon, he understood the anatomy and the physiology and everything that was going on for people, and really believed that there was this inherent mechanism keeping someone alive, and if you can support that, then you can change a person, change sickness, change pain. And so he founded it.
And so were there like early signs of results, like what how did it kind of get some traction?
Look, it really got some traction because he got results in terms of he was traveling around, sort of. He had a few kids and they sort of started to learn with him as well. But he ended up building essentially out a whole town. So built a big medical facility, a teaching facility, and there were so many people coming by a train all around America to him that they had to build like accommodation. And the town, I can't remember off the top of my head which it was, but it was phenomenal. And, you know, there's been so many times where they've obviously tried to shut different things down, but he really took osteopathy at the time to the place of medicine, really understanding the, like in America, you've got to be a GP first, then an osteopath, something you specialize in. That's obviously differentiated around the world. It's not the same for everywhere. But that in its basic premise is, really understanding the body on all levels and being able to work with someone to change disease, change pain, change.
I'm intrigued by that statement, healing people with your hands. Someone out there may never have been to see an osteopath before, but what does that feel like in practice?
It feels like in practice that you not only feel better in the way that you move or the pain that you had, but your body functions better. So there's a normal type of mechanism or motion or breath that's in the body that should exist. And so when you're sick or diseased or in pain, those mechanisms stop. So it's not just about improving the pain that you've got, but it's about restoring the health of the body. And that's something that there's an inert force in the body that sort of keeps someone alive. And by restoring the function of the body, that obviously is increased and healthier.
For someone that's never heard about this before, like, how do you actually do that?
Well, you basically find what is restricted. Like the traditional sort of term was find what's restricted, fix it, leave it alone. The body has the ability to fix itself, and it always should, but there's only ever if there's parts of the body that's stuck and it's not able to resolve. And most common, you know, so many lung issues, so many digestive issues, so much is bound in around the ribs because of the impact the nervous system has through those rib heads. So, you find what is not moving in its normal motion and you gain mobility and then it restores itself.
Cool. And to give some context, which is quite fun, I often like using myself as a guinea pig in conversations, but I have been for sessions with you, Luke, and they've been absolutely awesome. And there've been different experiences as part of it. And you've proven already to be very, like a fascinating practitioner in terms of the different fields of theory you're drawing from when you take me to different places, whether you're just you have me sat in a chair and you can just talk to me about stuff and things shift, or I can be lying flat on your bed and you can move things around, or equally you at one point you have me actually walking in the room to help me like walk through emotion or walk through trauma. And even we had a video call at one point when I was really under the pump with some stuff in my personal life that I was figuring out. And you helped me follow the pain and then started making me think about sensations and following the light. And I mean, it's just, it's crazy. So what, I've got a billion questions, but does any of that resonate with you? How did you come up with some of those different techniques?
They're not all osteopathy. Some of those things are called constellation therapy, where you take a person through a process. And that's a beautiful, you know, learning that I got to work with sort of large groups within, when I was in Melbourne for a number of years, both within men's work. I ran a men's organization for 5 years together with another mate. And also then with a larger group called Collective Potential. So that was great. We, you know, had 100 people in the room, and we used that sort of process with these people to facilitate change in the whole group. And that was a beautiful learning, you know, outside the scope of osteopathy, which at certain times for the right people and circumstances, and if they're inquiring about that, then we'll use that. But yeah, there's the different levels of osteopathy, and, you know, most people expect now when you go to an osteopath that you're going to get rubbed or cracked, or there's going to be some basic sort of manual therapy. But in true variance, there's a bigger scope of who we are. And what I really like, I mean, most of this stuff has been taken out of the schools now, because there's been a push for a long time to get the kind of original aspects of osteopathy taken out, and only what's sort of scientifically backed and proven. And, you know, most of the good stuff is difficult to prove.
Interesting.
In research. So that's kind of been, and that was a push from the start. You know, it was A.T. Still's son, I believe, that was the person who at one point they were going to de-license anyone who was teaching essentially cranial or biodynamic osteopathy. Wow. And they, we'd say they put that out there, and it was either his son or his grandson that said, no, we're going to keep it. And they ran a course and they kept it alive. And thanks to him, we've still got it, but otherwise it would have been lost many generations ago.
Wow.
And for that, I'm very thankful. And, you know, a big part of me learning probably more about the stuff that we've done with you is something called biodynamics. And that's, for me as an individual first, felt more integrous, maybe is the word, to myself and to what I see and what I feel. Like, I've always had, I don't know if it's unique, but I had an ability to feel and see beyond the physical. And I didn't really know initially how to actually work with that. It was wonderful to see it, but I was like, what's the framework to actually shift that? And I was really fortunate that a mentor helped and guided me and took me over to America and introduced me to that part of osteopathy being biodynamics. Mm. And it really brought home the ability of encompassing the spirit, the emotion, sort of, we've got different parts of our anatomy. And they're all just like being able to understand that these things are not separate or individual, or it's, you know, spirit's not completely way out there. It's having the full spectrum of our anatomy and the understanding of that when you're working with someone to essentially see where are they changing. Because you can identify that they're going through a midlife crisis and there's something that's actually shifting, something called an emotional field, which is like an aura. And if that needs to be addressed, then there's no point slamming home the physical tissue. You have to wait for that sort of strain to dissolve before they can actually come to a place called neutrality. And once their body is neutral through all those layers, then it starts to treat and fix itself. And that's been like goal for me. That's sort of more the work that we've done with you, which I find fascinating because it connects me to something beyond myself, which is influencing both you and I and sustaining us in life. And it takes people beyond being fixed into something new. And so that's really exciting for me when I work with people. It's like, well, I haven't got much to work. And I was like, great, that's a great place to work, because actually now we can not only fix the lesion or whatever else is there, you can continue to evolve and evolve in terms of your body, evolve in terms of who you are as a person. And this is all sitting within our anatomy. So for me, yeah, the scope of osteopathy is just whole. And I'm really fortunate to be able to work with people on that landscape and make, I believe, more profound impact through working with them in that sense.
And so, Luke, it'd be fair to say, in a way, that like having the title osteopath is not necessarily very fair of the full like spectrum in the toolkit. And that's where it's actually it's so interesting when you come across different people, because like some things I love is helping the body fix itself. That just feels so good. Like, why wouldn't you use that if it was available to you? But it's then like, what else have you come across that's cool, that helps? And so I like that idea of not being pigeonholed per se. And is it just from treating people that you come across situations where something you try doesn't work? Or is it there's so many different directions I want to go. But did you come up with specific use cases where you're like, I want to try and solve this and it's not currently working how I'm trying?
Look, I think it's, to be really honest, like this has been a seeking and an understanding of my own healing. And so I've really tried to understand my own body and my own injuries. And what we learned on a basic level at university at this present point in time, like what was being taught over 100 years ago was far more excellent than what we learned today. Wow. You know, they would look at and feel for what diabetes feels like in the body. And then they would go on and they'll try and read a person's blood sugar levels by feeling and then go and do a blood test and measure them. You know what I mean? So there's what we learn today, isn't that much there. But I guess coming back to your question, this has been a seeking and learning of my own problems. And so through my own injuries, I've learned a great deal. I mean, that's what brought, when I got beaten many years ago, broke my jaw, face, knocked all the teeth out. And I didn't realize that these things could be treated. I didn't realize that the bones of the head could move, that the sinuses respond with your lungs, that, you know, pressure behind the eyeballs can be changed, that, you know, all these sort of inner mechanisms of the body are treatable. And not just that, but also the physical imprint of being beaten. So, look, that was a big change and eye-opening in terms of what is possible. I also probably should say, like, I started treating people for a while, but realizing some people got better and some people didn't. And being able to differentiate in terms of feel what is a purely physical lesion and what is an emotional lesion. So I studied in part something called kinesiology, which again just opened up my mind to everything else that can affect our physical body. And so that was a really, even though I don't practice with that anymore, it still gives me the awareness of all the different influences on our body and our nervous system, on our hormonal system, on our, you know, gut system. So this has really been a journey of learning for myself and then getting to a place that I can help people equally. One of the most beautiful things and humbling lessons was I had a client that I worked for a number of years, and it was infuriating, I believe, for them and for me, but she kept turning up. And I'm like, I'm not getting you better. Like, why are we here?
Stop coming, please.
Stop coming, But it was a really beautiful lesson in both that I'm there to help someone else at the same time as they're here to help me. And it wasn't until I actually learned that lesson to receive in treatment that I was sort of held there for probably at that point of my capacity to help people for years until I finally realized that I'm in this with them. You know, there's many layers to a body, and where obviously the person you work with, you have also a connection to, and that goes beyond. But I really had to learn to receive in the treatment as well. And that comes more into the biodynamics rather than the purely physical. But once I understood that, it just took a whole new level of treatment in that I was able to transform at the same time that they were able to transform. And you realize that people come in for problems that I'm dealing with. So there's this whole beautiful interrelationship of learning, growing, expanding, evolving, of which I'm truly eternally grateful for and get paid to do.
It's a very strong alignment in terms of incentive, which I like seeing in things. Bitcoin does
so
it too.
I believe, like, it is. And
go on, Luke.
People keep turning up for, if there's something in myself that is stuck, people will keep turning up with a problem. And so if I keep seeing that same problem in people, I know that I really need to shift that focus inwards and actually change that for myself. And then, of course, new people come through.
And so to take a kind of entrepreneurial lens in a sense, but I always like seeing business opportunities when the person driving the business has solved the problem that they had. It was a really big problem and it pissed them off for a long time, and they figured out how to solve it. And actually then they're like, well, hang on, tons of other people probably need to know this too. And not to pry too far about like the work you've had to do on yourself, but I'd love to learn, in terms of working through things that you found really challenging that you now use to help other people. Like you mentioned, like the injury to your head. I had no idea. That sounds fucking intense. I'm sorry about that. What other major lessons cropped up through your own journey?
Yeah, look, there's been an underlying, and then just cutting to it and being honest and real and raw, like cutting to it, the biggest lesson in my life has been actually dealing with my dad who molested my sister. So for me, I had this narrative my whole life of, could I be him? Is that something that I have in me, if my own dad had that in himself? And so I had to sort of work through that process of realizing that I'm not him, but also finding acceptance for him. You know, everyone cut him out of the family. And I didn't want to judge something, because I believed if I judged something, then I would repeat the pattern. So I wanted to find understanding and peace within that. And I wanted to find understanding and peace with him. And through that, you know, that led me on the men's work, that led me, you know, that had a physical imprint in my own body around stress and fatigue, and replicating other patterns, not of that nature, but of a different physical nature around him, and trying, basically, I wanted to understand him. So I sort of, in a way, embodied and took on a lot of aspects of him to understand. And I've had to then try and treat them. And then you realize actually some of this stuff that I'm treating in myself, or when I'm treating other people, isn't theirs. But it's something they've inherited genetically. It's something that's been passed down generationally. It's something that's has a physical imprint in our body, but it's not of our own cause. So that's been a major breakthrough in treatment, in that people come in complaining of things. And yeah, I mean, that was probably one of the major lessons. I had a pain in my right quad when I was studying, and I was a runner at the time, and I couldn't figure out, I don't know, 6 months, what it was. Had all the treatment, had scans, everything. And I learned that it was an emotional strain that had actually come from the my lecturer who failed me. I failed a year at school and at university, and had to stay back a year. And so I didn't realize that we could physically take on other people's stuff. And that was a big lesson in itself. So there's been like the emotional lessons in life. There's been the things I've had to work through personally. There's been, I mean, I've broken most of the bones in my body. I've had, you know, 3 or 4 car accidents, bike accidents, had a knife in my back. Like I've done lots of injuries. And so, yeah, learning to sort of work through those, and going even further, and I don't know if this is too far or too much information at once, but
nothing is too far, Luke. Just whatever feels right, please feel free to share.
For me, one of the biggest, all my left side of my body, so I've broken most of the stuff that was on my left side of my body, and even just realized recently that, you know, past life stuff truly exist and also has a physical imprint again on our body. And this is something that I've known, but I still had like a really transformation experience of that, and that's completely changed my left side of my body even over the last couple of weeks. So I'm continually learning, both through getting treatment and through treating. You get shown, you know, mirrors. So yeah, there's, everything is a lesson.
Thank you for sharing. The very like core of the reason I want to continue to podcast like this is to have real conversations just like this.
Yeah.
Where, like, I don't care about being censored on a different platform. I'm not doing this because I want tons of people watching or whatever. It's it's serious conversations about stuff that's really fucking hard and an amazing thing to share. Thank you. You're not your dad.
No.
And you never will be. And that's actually quite hard to figure out. And to not gloss over what you just told me, but my father died 48 years old from a heart attack. And a lot of the decisions I've made over the last 15 years are to avoid that happening, thinking that I'm him. And I'm not, right? So I'm not going to die from a heart attack when I'm 48. But you, in my head, I thought I might. So it's so strange, isn't it? So let's really dive into this idea then. There's kind of two sides to it in terms of the I'm going to call it the physical side of this, and then also the kind of mental side of it. But you talked about like removing physical pains from your back, from your body. I was thinking about the kind of the mental side of this and the physical side of this. And so a few things you touched on there is like the idea that you can inherit things in your body that manifest in a physical form. Like they're obviously connected.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
I think that mental things are, we learn patterns, behaviors, thoughts, beliefs, and that is intertwined within our brainstem, our primordial functions. So our thoughts change our biochemical markers, change our hormones, change the way we feel. So when we've learnt those patterns, they are expressed in the body. And so there's a physical expression of that pattern of thinking, of that pattern of beliefs, of that pattern of understanding. And so when you're working with someone, being able to change particularly stuff around the brainstem, that resets the tension, strain, and there's a normal function. There's always part of us that's completely uninhibited or untouched by the imprints that we have in life. But those restrictions in belief and thoughts and patterns have a physical strain in the body. And so when you work through them, release them and change, the body dissolves them.
And so the idea of like time travel, you know, most people are like, fuck off, not possible. But actually the physical ailments that manifest in our daily life, sometimes, as you're showing and as I've experienced myself, are actually connected to the actions of ancestors of yours. Like, what?
Yeah.
And this is actually so niche in my mind. Like,
yeah.
No one's really talking about this. No. I'll give one bit of context being Loz went for her first ever session with you, and she's got a few things not to mention publicly, but things that just haven't ever gone away. And you immediately connected some of the pain she experienced with a basically family related thing. And she said, you said, be careful, you might be a bit irritable or something over the weekend. Your body's really moved a lot. And within 48 hours, she was like all over the place. And we had this kind of crazy week. I was like, what the hell just happened? And I was like, oh my God, it's because, she's like, no, it's because I saw that guy Luke 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And I came in to see you a couple of weeks later or something, and here we are now. But how is that the case then? That, because I didn't ever finish reading it, I must admit, but there was a book called The Body Keeps the Score. It was very, very interesting. And it reminds me, I must go back and finish it. But there's just a very, very close connection between your physical reality and your mind. And then it's like, it's almost stored trauma.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have all of that. Yeah. I don't know what to say to that, but it's very much, that's all in our body. And we have kids and, you know, we learn our lessons through having kids. So these kids are an expression of us. And then we get to, you know, they have our lessons in our life in them, some of which haven't been resolved and continue to repeat. But when you change something in an individual, you change it both 7 generations forward and 7 generations back.
Wow.
So when treating, you know, when kids come in with stuff, you really want to treat the parents, because there's this, although each individual is individual and they bring their own unique experiences, you really are treating the family and the family dynamic and the family's dynamic. And there won't not, you don't have to find and look into and dissolve and like all these sort of things, but it's sometimes things pop up. And so just having an awareness of that within the context of the anatomy can give you, if that arises, go, okay, that's what we're treating with, that's what we're working with. Whereas if you don't even know it exists, then trying to just change the muscle or change the joint won't really work.
Hmm. Okay. So,
yeah.
And it makes me think about, oh, I mean, like I said earlier, a gazillion different things at the same time, but to try and piece this together a bit more. So you touched on earlier that as you were progressing through your healing journey personally, but also healing other people, you suddenly came across this idea that you could feel things or that you had like an intuition that was telling you to do things. And so I'm like, from a, at least finance perspective, very interested in investing and decision making. How do you decide to do stuff from a point of making money? But it's not just about making money, life. It's about actually having great relationships, having a healthy body, having great experiences. And those are ways that you can invest in as well. They just aren't necessarily financial returns.
Yeah.
So how did you first kind of come across, let's say, your superpowers? And like initially, it must have been kind of confusing. You're like, this, no one's told me this is allowed. And like, yeah, how did you figure that out?
I guess I'm going to pop back to that. But one thing I just want to touch on what you were saying is investing in these parts, investing in your body. And it's not always about just finances or these things, but it's, for me, actually getting people to tune into and become aligned in their own body. So our body breathes, speaks, feels, and when you are making decisions, regardless of what aspect of your life, your body is constantly giving you biofeedback. Your body expands when something is right and it contracts when something is wrong. So creating this awareness in feel, sensation, breath, energy in our own body, we can feel what is aligned with our purpose, with our soul, with ourself in a choice versus something that's contractually wrong, something that causes contraction in our body. So, yeah, in terms of making decisions in our life, my thing is really about helping people become more in tune with their own body. And so for me, it took getting smashed to find that attunement, that alignment, that sensorial awareness. My goal is not to fix people, but just to help them become aligned in themselves, because when they can do that, they make better decisions, they say better things, they have better thoughts, because they're constantly stepping into alignment for themselves of what really matters. And when they do that, their body is better. And when they don't, their body, if they're off that path a little bit, they'll get a little injury. If they continue off that path, they'll get a bigger injury. And if they're really not in going the wrong way in life, they'll get slammed. And so that was the path for me. I really believe there's a line, there's a path that we're here and destined for, and that we can use our body as a barometer to speak and feel as to whether we're going in the right direction.
Cool. And good, another good bit of context again as myself. So I had a session with you recently, and I was talking you through the ongoing discussion that I have with my wife about like where we're going to live as a family, and you know, can we afford some real estate, and if so, how do we do it in a way that doesn't kind of give up all of the great work we've done in building our Bitcoin position. And it's an ongoing discussion, but I mentioned a couple of addresses to you, and you're like, "Ooh, that one feels good," and it's like, I actually find that very, very useful. And there's not many people out there that might say, oh, I'm going for a session with someone who calls himself an osteopath, but frankly is doing all this other cool stuff because I'm about to make a financial decision. And like, in some ways, it's kind of like going to see the wizard, isn't it? The druid around the corner. Like, but this has been happening for so long.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you use that tool when it actually exists? So thank you. And I will continue to try and improve at that, to improve alignment. And we'll come back to this if we can, Luke. I'd love to dig back into this idea of you coming across this sense of talent, maybe, or of insight. And you even said at the very start that you can actually see, I mentioned this in my note to you on the email, it's like you can see people's auras.
Yeah,
and I walk in, I sit down, and you look at me, and you just go, and you know all this stuff straight away. I'm like, what? How do you do that?
Yeah, look, I believe it's there for everyone, but obviously if it's more ingrained or taught or felt for certain people, and I believe everyone has the capacity. But for me, I think, I guess I'll tell you a little story about my mum. Like, she passed away 10, 11 years ago, and her death really goes, made me realize that life's real, death's real. If I've got this gift, I need to use it. But I knew she was going to die the day she died because she always said to me that angels were coming to collect her. I didn't know that that was real or could be seen, but the day before she passed, I could feel and see this presence above the house. And
oh my God,
it was weird because, on that day, everyone decided to leave. And I thought, that's strange. Should I tell them? Should I not tell them? And I just thought, no, if I trust, if that's her passing and they feel that inclination to leave, then I'll trust them. And slowly I could see that presence or that light come from the top of the house down to the end of the bed and slowly overtake her. And then when she passed, there was a splitting. So there was part that stayed in the house and there was part that shot off in light, like literally like a bolt of lightning. Wow. And then that stayed for maybe a little while her body was still on the farm. I grew up on a farm down in country Victoria. And when she left the farm, it was like that, you know, the dust has been stirred up in the air. You can still feel it. But the moment she left, that all just disappeared. So I guess that was one of the major awakenings. You know, I used to get drunk or high and I would be able to tell people's futures or pasts. And I knew that there was something there, but I didn't really want to tap into it and I didn't really want to acknowledge it. But as those inhibitions broke down, I was more free. But probably the big change was Ireland. I believe, like, I've got Scottish and English heritage, but when I went to Ireland, like, all the hairs on my body stood up. And I'd never been to a country where mysticism was so heavily ingrained and just part of society. And it really changed something. It really awakened something in myself. And I was there and I left and I was like, okay, I need to continue to do my osteopathy work, but branch out into some other facets of work beyond osteopathy. And I've had to sort of separate those for sort of a legal sense. But there's much more. Osteopathy is a great base framework to learn, feel, sense, treat, but there's so much more beyond. And so I made that decision. I started work for myself and I was really then free to sort of go on and do bits of different other work as well as osteopathy, to really help people at the level that I believe is possible and the level that I seek for myself. And what's beautiful is people keep turning up at a higher level for help, for guidance, for connection. And it's not to get that from me, but I believe it's to get that from themselves. And that's my ultimate goal through treating people now on one, but I want to extend that out to treating and teaching people, helping people remember that ability to feel, see, and sense for themselves.
And I've had a few conversations on the podcast recently where people have mentioned one's resonance and the power of resonance for opportunity and people in your life falling away, but other people appearing. And so I would argue that the experience that we are having as a family unit, so my wife and my three children being treated by you and but it was just the turn of 2025. So probably January, Lauren turned up and that's about resonance. Like, as we've just matched, essentially. It's like, no, this is the right guy to go and talk to at this time. And that might shift again at some point. But honestly, my whole body just tingled, like, all the way down, really strong when you were talking about angels and your mother. And that's, I can't deny that feeling. What the hell just happened? I feel like I'm like,
Well, there's a truth.
Not on drugs, but it was like electricity or something. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
You said it. Oh, please, Luke, go.
No, go.
Well, I said, you said a word that's caught my attention, mysticism.
Yeah.
So what does that mean to you?
I believe it's a connection with God and it's a connection with the gods and the underworld and the angels and the fairies and all these other aspects of life which are fairy tales, but were once believed, seen, felt, saw. And we've become very cognitive in our life and our world, and we need to operate in a financial system where we just have to go to job, go to work, come home. But these things still exist, and there's different parts of the world that are more aligned to it and are easily make it more easy to feel felt. For instance, like for me, I went to Arnhem Land recently, and again, that was another experience of just going. I wanted to go back and learn about Indigenous culture, but also Indigenous healing. And because the nature of, I guess to explain a little bit about our anatomy as well, so we've got our physical body, we've got something called emotional body, which is extends out to the horizon, so that includes nature in itself, and then we've got our spiritual body out to the stars, and then it kind of extends a space between and then back to wholeness, oneness. But part of, and I'm probably digressing here, but part of our disconnect from some of these mysticism elements is our actual disconnect to nature. When we go out and we turn our phone off and we sit in nature, we start to actually regain some of these senses of smell, sight, feeling, gut sense, you know, vision, our higher understand. We start to reconnect with these other parts of life, but we never get any time extensively without the stimulation of all the things that bring us back into a very small space. When we have that connection, for me, this part of the process of what I'd like to help people is really help them first connect back with nature, which expands their emotional body, expands their ability to feel and their body to breathe, connect them back to the stars and help them understand their calling, their purpose. And even in that, as souls that have had different lives, we're from, some people have spent multiple lives in different places and planets of which bring different abilities, gifts. And these are all things that were far out and whacked and just incomprehensible to me until I learned that we, our soul can disconnect from our body. If we're not aligned and living in purpose and living for what we're here to do, then our soul would go to somewhere safe. And so that happened to me. Someone helped me reconnect with my soul, my body, and sort of bring, therefore, my purpose back to my life. And I believe that's an integral part for people. And if they can understand and have a connection to that, they have a more felt sense and awareness and knowledge of what is their purpose and what is the right choice. But when we're just operating from the mind and we're not operating from that felt sense, we have a fat chance of doing anything purposeful in life.
It's interesting to me as well, because I often, as you well know, spin Bitcoin into conversations. But the Federal Reserve in the United States was founded just over 100 years ago. And I just recently began a book that is teaching me about Rockefeller and the foundation of Standard Oil, and how the Rockefellers ended up working with the Rothschilds because they were in some trade war, and then they ended up doing a side deal and teaming up. And the then creation of all of the Rockefeller-funded education and medicine, and just, it's absolutely insane how much control on, like, common wisdom a single family's had. And I haven't even finished the introduction of the book. It's already blowing my mind. But it's the disconnect that intervention, in a sense, has allowed. And it's also then the ability of someone to print their own money to then pay everyone to carry on saying what they want to say that gets us to the position that we're in today. Like, we're all living in cities, wearing shoes, inside, on smartphones, and they take every penny they can in tax, plus smashes with inflation on the back end and pretend that no one knows. It's absolutely mad what's going on. And so
it is mad.
It seems, and I agree with you, these are so connected in terms of how that disconnect's begun.
It is. But I also believe that we've come here to, I'll talk for myself, I believe I've come here to find my purpose in this world. And I also have an inherent belief on some level that everything is here to help and serve, not hinder. And yes, there's so many things that are happening in this world that I truly believe are destructive and awful and horrible. But it drives us to a place of which we have no choice but to connect with something higher. And so there's equal purpose and inhibition in everything that we're experiencing. So yes, there's these problems with medicine. And yes, there's problems with politics. And yes, there's problems with money. But without that uncomfortability, would we dive deeper? Would we seek something more? And so I believe it's part of an awakening of people to their spiritual self, to their physical self, to all parts of themselves. And without it, so, and that's looking at it from a higher lens, in the personal lens and experience lens, yes, it's shit. But I do believe there's value in it.
I almost need to, like screen record that and just keep it to remind myself every day. The reason there's hard things is to create solutions, which actually makes things better. To paraphrase in a way, but also I think that one is so quick to judge, and actually it's about observing. And what some dude did 100 years ago is irrelevant. Just to kind of like shoot myself down, which is like, why do I care? Like, I can make all these decisions on my own. I can go to you for healthcare and like whatever. It really makes no difference.
But personalizing this for both of us, you know, in our stories about our dads, that's why I've tried to find and not judge, but find the beauty and find the growth and find the magic behind what happened. And that's, you know, really what took me into constellation work, a little bit of that step work that we did with you, but I did it on a much bigger scale with more people. When you can see that, you can see the divine in all things. And so, yes, your situation with your dad has caused a big disruption and change in yourself and your family and these things. But when you can shift from something being wrong to be curious about what something is right about it and the beauty behind it and the divine plan that's within it, then you start to move and be guided into a direction of something of growth and evolution that would be impossible otherwise. And so for me personally, it was only when I lost my dad a year or two ago that I started to see a lot of the beauty behind the situation. And I never got to change him. I never got to treat him. I never got to fix him. But it drove me to a place to heal, to grow, to evolve in myself that I would have never had the opportunity to do. You know, who I am today is essentially because of him. And so, I don't know what I was saying on that. I know there's a lot
of flat. It hits home very hard. It's basically like, even in the deepest and darkest moments, having the ability to ask, what's the lesson here? And through that question, you can start to take yourself into the direction, or maybe it's not a case of take yourself, it's about allowing it to unfold.
So yeah,
there was some purpose in that dark, difficult time.
Yeah,
and maybe there's a part of you see it with hindsight. I don't know, it's probably not possible to see at the time, but
But you will evolve as a person because of your dad's situation to be a person that you would have never been had that not happened and had he not been the way he was. And for that, your kids will be grateful. Your wife will be grateful. Your grandkids will be grateful. So I just try to catch that thing of not getting too caught of like anti-establishment. Even though I believe it, I can see the beauty behind it too. So
the cool thing there, though, Luke, is that there are people out there. I know some in my own circle of friends and family that they are constantly obsessed with like the next bad thing, and it's all them and they. And although I do agree that there are people out there trying to do nasty things, absolutely there are. Like COVID taught us that for sure, but the point is you don't have to play that game, is what you're helping to see here, is that every single individual has some fairly simple mental like tools to kind of sidestep. It's like, yes, that's a problem, but it doesn't have to consume your life.
Yeah.
You can just come over this way.
And what's the beauty in the lesson for me? Like, I truly believe, and maybe this is just my lens of life, I'm sure it is, but everyone that I know either made a decision to change their life in the way that they wanted during that time, or were forced to, or they were actually living correct and they weren't as inhibited or affected as other people. So these harsh circumstances, situations really move us that we wouldn't be moved in any way other than, you know, through uncomfortability. So, yeah, it's just a challenge to, when someone comes in with all these problems, it's like you can be a victim in it, or you can be, you know, the creator, or you can be like the master of all these things that you've become. It's not terrible words, but yeah.
No. It's I'm here to learn from you, Luke. Let's get the crystal ball out for a moment. And, you know, what does your spidery sense say about where we are this year? And what does the rest of 2025 have in store for us?
Look, I can only really share with you what's happening now, both in my life and what's in the people that I see around me as a sort of a, this has been a massive shakeup this year, in really bringing up old patterns and really being uncomfortable. And Easter was a big one. It's like, again, you know, sign of Christ being reborn. People really are getting reborn and aligned. And I find it's a fantastic year for people because they're really stepping into, or being forced to step into, what is right for them and just relinquishing things that no longer serve them. So I can't see too much of where that would go, but I just see within all the clients that are coming in and for my own life, I've changed my patterns and my beliefs and my reality and just my life drastically this year. And I really see other people just shaking off old shit and moving in a new trajectory. That is powerful and purposeful.
And so if there's anyone listening out there that isn't within a drive time of you, we'll obviously get your website in the show notes and stuff, Luke, so people can reach out to you. But what would be your like top three tips to help someone feel better, are fairly easy and attainable?
I mean, what's feel better? It's feel better is to make better decisions that align better in themselves.
Yeah, well, help me define that, you know, like, here's three things you could chuck into a week, says Luke Wallace, that, you know, might help you feel better.
The basic things are movement, water, and sunlight. Of course, like if you move, you're going to feel better. If you have a shower, you have a swim, you're going to feel better. If you sit in the sun, you're going to feel better. Like nature and movement is the underlying premise that keeps us alive. Mm-hmm. So those three things will transform anyone. But
and is that every day, or do you choose one per day or something? Or
for me, more important than this is, and this is maybe too far in terms of just practical steps, is actually just learning to listen to what your body needs. Like that's, if I can get you to ask that question of what your body needs today, then you'll get a more specific answer, a more specific thought, a more specific feel or action that is needed than giving a general script. And I know that's
cool though. But that's actually really cool. So in some ways, you see all that kind of bro science on YouTube or whatever, where it's like, here's my morning routine. It takes these blokes like 3 hours to get up. And you're like, who does that? But it's quite easy to wake up and be like, what do I need today? If you can just get like, you know, 3 minutes to yourself, you know, throw the crying toddler out of the way or whatever and just be like, what do I need?
I mean, there's...
And do you do that each day? Do you talk to yourself in a sense?
I try to. Yeah, look, I have gone through, you know, all those sort of books. The 4-Minute Morning is sort of, I think it's one of the ones that's great. It like goes through, you can do all those things in a few minutes. Meditation, breath work has been one of the most powerful transformative exercises in my life. It's something that I was doing each morning.
Cool.
I try to have an underlying principle of exercise, sunlight, movement, and rest. But I do get up and ask, you know, what actually feels right or what's actually needed. And yeah, this is a continual growth in like being out of tune and listen to that for myself.
It's cool because it sounds so simple, but weirdly, we're so, that it's not obvious in that, I don't know, I could be wrong here, but I'm so deeply conditioned to seek assistance from other people, like experts, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas actually it's like, what if it's as simple as just saying, tune into yourself, go, Jake, what does your body need today? Obviously, it will tell you that it needs a drink of water, it needs to eat some food.
Yeah.
But there might be like, no, you need to make sure you get something done to this area of your body, or investigate a problem that you've had for ages and have been ignoring, or I don't know what might come up, but no practitioner or even loved one is going to know the answer to that better than yourself.
And there's a slight distinguishable difference in that of asking just your body, because the body is just a part of ourself and it's an expression of everything, but what do I need this morning?
And so if you ask the question, what do I need, that will encompass your whole being. Okay, cool. Awesome. Yeah. Well, everyone who's hopefully listening out there, that is a great way to potentially start your day. So, Luke, where can people reach out and get in touch?
Tideshealingcentre.com.au is my website. I do online sessions if people are remote, not in Byron Bay. If they are here, then, yeah, come and see me. They can book in for a session. But working remotely via Zoom or whatever else is just a beautiful way. I feel it's it removes a lot of the blocks to actually help them connect with themselves and make those shifts for themselves. Because I believe like that's where the power is.
Yeah, we did one video call at a time of extreme need for me, and it was very, very, very powerful. I actually did a podcast solo episode about it a few weeks ago, and I went to another world. Like I literally completely conked out and woke up in this bed. I'm like, where's Luke gone? What the hell's happened? You've got me into such a deep meditation. I highly recommend people reach out and get in touch for just a video call experience. It was extremely valuable to me. Well, Luke, thank you so much for your time tonight. It's been great fun chatting, and
thank you,
Jay. I really appreciate everything you shared. Thank you.
Thanks for asking and talking and also sharing.
No, my pleasure. Thanks, Luke.